We're here on Daf Chav Dalid Amud Aleph. We're about one third of the way down, and we're up to Omar Rav Nachman, Omar Shmuel, and you'll see it. Let's say a little bit below the beginning of Tosfos Divrei HaMashgal Avol. Karpaf Yoser Mi Beis Asayim Shelo Hukaf L'Dira. So here we have our classic Karpaf, which is larger than a Beis Asayim, and it's Lo Hukaf L'Dira. Now, obviously, in this case, there's an Isur Tiltul. That's what we spoke about many times. Karpaf, the Rabbanan, considered it like a Rishus HaRabim, and they prohibited Tiltul, even though technically on a Daraisa level it's Rishus HaYochid, it's Mukaf Mechitzos. Now, what happens if with the passage of time the situation changes, and after he set up the mechitzos, he actually built himself a dira, some sort of place where he's going to establish his residence, and now the karpaf itself is functioning as an extension of his dira. It's not an entity unto itself. You know, we called it a golf course. It's now part of his dira. Can we now change the karpaf, and by transferring its status from that of a karpaf to a makom hukaf l'dira, which we said that a makom hukaf l'dira, even if it's beyond the beis asayim, is mutter? And the answer is that some conditions have to be met. It's not a carte blanche. You don't have an absolute heter, and you cannot automatically alter the status of the karpa from an isa tiltul to a heter tiltul unless the following conditions are met. That's the statement in the name of Shmuel. So he says the following. Ketzaru Ose, how is he going to be matir tiltul in this area? Poreitzlo pirtza yoser mieser amos. What he's going to do is, he's going to actually deliberately breach the mechitzos that surround this karpaf to the minimum length of 10 amos or more, minimum. Once he breaks down the mechitza by 10 amos that surrounds this karpaf, now the karpaf is considered as if it has no mechitzos. And this is based on a sugi that we learned on Daf Vav, that a pirtza that's less than 10 amos is not mevatel the mechitza, but rather it's called a pesach, not a pirtza. But if it's more than 10 amos, that's considered a pirtza, it's not a pesach, and it's mevatel the mechitza. So at this point, we've, so to speak, changed the very entity of the karpaf, because essentially it's a karpaf is a makom mukaf mechitzos, and now it's no longer mukaf mechitzos, because we've broken down at one particular point, at one place, a mechitza, broken down the mechitza by eser amos and more, and then godro umamido al eser amos. Now he's going to fill in that eser amos of the pirtza. Godro means ke'ilu fence it off, meaning to establish a replacement mechitza. And now what he's going to have is a pirtza that's up to but not beyond eser amos. And a pirtza of 10 amos exact is not mevatel the mechitza. And now we have a hekev of a karpaf that was done specifically for dira. It was hukaf lidira. Why? Because the old hekev is gone. because you have a pirtzah that's more than what? Then more than Eser Amos. Correct? So let's say, for example, you made the pirtzah 11 Amos. Now what you're going to do is you're going to establish a geder, a fence of 1 Amos. So now the pirtzah is only Eser Amos. And a pirtzah of Eser Amos is not Mevatel Mechitza. So again, even though you didn't actively put up a Mechitza, you only filled in a little bit of the pirtzah, but that's considered as if you set up the Mechitza. It's a brand new Hekif Mechitzas. Why? Because once you had a pirtzah of 11 Amos, there's no Mechitzas anymore. And a Karpaf and its status depends upon the Hekif Mechitzas. Not the Hekif Mechitzas as a reality, you know, in terms of what is, but a Hekif Mechitzas as a Maisa, as an action, to be Makif. Right? The word Hekif describes the object, but Makif describes the action of the person. And everything hinges, in the case of a Karpaf, on the Maisa Hekif. When you set up the mechitzos around this karpaf that's more than a beis asayim, did you do so for dira or not for dira? And in this case, it was not for dira, but now you broke down the mechitzos. Once you broke down the mechitzos are betelos, now we can have a new maisa hekev that will replace the original maisa hekev, and now it's ledira because you've subsequently set up your beautiful mansion on the outer boundary of this karpaf, intending to use the karpaf as if it was your courtyard, as if it was your backyard. And there's an additional chiddush over here. You don't have to actually rebuild the mechitzos. You just have to rebuild that part that will take that breach, that pirtzah, and reduce it to 10 amos. Once you reduce it to 10 amos, it's as if you created a whole new set of mechitzos. Now, obviously, this is not something that you're allowed to do on Shabbos, because that would be a malacha of setting up mechitzos. We don't set up mechitzos on Shabbos. Now, if again, let's say he wants to set up his dira now, and he makes a pirtzah that's less than 10 amos. If it's less than 10 amos, then that's not considered as if he now is setting up a new hekef mechitzos, because since it was a pirtzah of less than 10 amos, which we consider a Pesach, he never took apart or destroyed, if you can use that word, the original mechitzos. Why? Because the pirtzah was less than 10 amos. Iboilehu, which is a classic language, which means that in the Beis Medrash they had a suffix. Poratz Amo, Vigodar Amo, Poratz Amo Ugidora, Achish Lima Liosame Eser Amos Ma. Is it necessary that the pirtzah be 10 Amos plus in one shot, such that now he replaces the entire mechitza that was gone, or can he do it piecemeal? Can he start by removing over here on this left side 1 amma of the mechitza and then replace that 1 amma? Then move to his right and he does the same thing and takes down another amma and replaces it, and so forth and so on until he does this 11 times. So that if you look from the end retroactively, he has actually set up a new mechitza that didn't exist before of 10 plus amos. But yet the paradox here is because there was never a moment in time where the original hekev and the original mechitzas were betelos. Because at every moment after he removed one amma, he replaced it. So you never had 1 second in time where this karpaf was lacking mechitzos. It always had mechitzos. The hekif was always there. But in terms of the total maisa hekif, he has actually replaced more than 10 amos of the original hekif. You know, I mean, imagine, just for the fun of it, that the original Hekef was made of blue boards. Now, he's got 11 white boards. But each board was an Amma, and there was no point in time when the original Hekef for blue boards was Batel. Because, as far as Hilchos Mechitzos is concerned, it matters not whether it's blue boards or white boards. So do we say that since there was never a moment in time which is called simultaneity, in which there was a pirtza of more than 10 amos, then he's not being makifit ledira because the original mechitzos are still there? Or shall we say no? That now that we have a mechitza of 10 amos that is nischadesh, that's a brand new mechitza of 10 amos, because we're going to add together each one of 10 amos, and now it's all for the sake of dira, then that's considered a mokum amukaf ledira. Amalahu. Now, this question was asked to Rav Nachman. I'm not sure exactly how we know that this question was asked to Rav Nachman, but it was Rav Nachman who made the original statement about a Karpaf Yosef Beis Asayim and Poreisol Pirtzi Yosef Meeser and then Godro. And apparently the Bnei Yeshiva, after they heard this from Rav Nachman, they turned to Rav Nachman and asked him, can you qualify your halacha and tell me when it applies, when it doesn't apply? So Rav Nachman responded as follows, that there's a Mishnah in Kalim. And based on this Mishnah in Kalim, I'm going to be able to give you an answer to your question. Now, obviously, the subject of Kalim is Tumah V'Tahara, so Rav Nachman is really stretching his arm out for an analogy between the laws of Mechitzos as far as Hekef of a Karpaf is concerned and the laws of Tumah V'Tahara. So we'll see if we can somehow appreciate that analogy. So now we're learning a Mishnah in Kalim. Kalim is a gigantic Masechta, so we're in the 17th chapter of Masechta Kalim. And it says the following. We're talking now about the Shiurim, right, the minimum size of a Kli that makes it susceptible to Kapolas Tumah, and that minimum size reflects the fact that it's functional. And what happens if the Kli is broken and it now has holes in it? Now, obviously, if the Kli is used for liquids, then when you pour the liquids into the Kli and it has a hole in it, that's not really functional. But on the other hand, you could put solids inside the Kli. So let's say, for example, I want to keep small beans in the Kli, it's a receptacle for beans, then once the hole is larger than the size of a bean, it no longer is functional, because I'm going to put my beans in, they're going to fall out. But let's say I put olives into this receptacle. The olive is a larger fruit. Then we would have to ask ourselves, is the hole larger than not only a bean, but also an olive? Well, let's say I want to put pomegranates into this receptacle. Pomegranate is a heck of a lot larger than an olive, which is larger than a bean. So that now my shear of a nekev, of a hole, has expanded, and the nekev which would be mafkia shem kli would have to be the size of a nekev that you could even hold pomegranates inside. The pomegranate is going to fall through. So the Mishnah now opens up with the phrase kol kli eitz, and we're talking about wooden kalim, and the reason why he emphasizes wooden kalim, says Rashi, is that the classic kli would be cheres, which is earthenware, and that has a different shear in the case of earthenware, which is Gemara and Shabbos, that even a small shard of a kli cheres could be used in many different ways. But now we're talking about a kli eitz. And we're talking about a kli eitz that is designated for balabatim, And the significance of Balabatim is that we're not talking about an uman. An uman makes kelim as a matter of profession. He's a manufacturer of utensils and he sells them on the market. He's not going to sell any sort of kli with any sort of hole in it. That would be a bush of a cherpa for his umnus. You know, he has the halts and grois. You know, he has to appeal, you know, to his audience, to his clientele, and therefore he's not going to sell broken kelim. But if you ask me whether or not it has a shame kli for me as an individual, as a baal bayit, I'm not selling it on the public market. Therefore, the question is, can it function? And therefore it still retains its shame kli, its makabel tum. So the Mishnah establishes shi'uron kirimonim. That means as long as I can store a large fruit, in this case a pomegranate, in this receptacle, the hole is smaller than your average pomegranate, then it still has a shame kli, its makabel tum. But if it has a nekev, a hole, that is larger than your pomegranate, then batel shleim kli, and it's tar. Now, this is interesting, because when we say it's tar, not only are we saying that it would not be makabel tum if, let's say, a sheretz fell into the kli, but even if a sheretz had fallen into the kli, and the kli was tamei, and then subsequently it broke, and the opening of the kli is now greater than that of a pomegranate, then the tumah is parchal yavir. The tumah just completely evaporates. Okay. Now, let's just point out one other thing as we go along. What happens in a case where Reuven, I'm just mentioning, you know, Ploni Almoni, decides that he wants to keep watermelons in the kli, which are much larger than pomegranates? And then the question becomes whether this shear of kirimon is absolutely objective and it's uniform, universal for everyone, or could there be a subjective element that if I consider this a kli, because I want to use it to store watermelons, and watermelons are not going to be affected by a hole that is the size of a rimon, therefore for me it's considered a kli. For you, it would not be considered a kli because it has a neck of the shear of a rimon. But for me, if I've decided, hini mukhir mezuman, I want to keep my watermelons there, then for me it's a kli. Okay. Now we're up to Chizkiah. Chizkiah, of course, is an Amora, and he's trying to analyze this Mishnah of the Tanoim. Boy Chizkiah. Chizkiah vacillates the following. Nikev kimotzi zayis. The size of the hole is that of an olive, which is smaller than a pomegranate. Ustamo. And he plugs it up. Again, exactly how he plugs it up. I mean, is it enough that he plugs it up on a temporary basis or he does something more permanent? Then chazev and nikev. Now there's another hole. You know, this is a really holy wooden utensil. It's very vulnerable, obviously. Ustama. And once again, he plugs up the second hole. So notice that there was never a moment of time where both holes lived simultaneously. Bazar v'nikev kimotzi zayis ustomo. Achishlimo l'shir motzi rimon. Mao. What's the status of this kli? If you would add together all the different nikovim, the different holes, you have kimotzi rimon. And therefore it's not a kli. It's tar. But if, on the other hand, you ask me, was there any one split second in time when there was a shear of Kerima? And the answer is no, because after every opening of a Kezias worth, a smaller opening, he plugged it up. The Aralei, Rabbi Yochanan. So Chizkiah and Rabbi Yochanan were contemporaries, and Rabbi Yochanan responds to Chizkiah, Rabbi, you know, he calls him my Rebbe, out of Kavod, Shanisalanu, in the past you've pointed to a different Mishnah in the 26th chapter of Kelim, and that's what you taught us. Shinsalanu. Sandal. Okay, we're talking about a shoe, a sandal, and it was worn by a Zav. Now, in the case of a Zav, we have a Tumah that's called Tumas Medris, which means that the weight of a Zav on a utensil generates Tumah on the utensil. Fine. By the way, when I say Zav, there are actually four different categories. There's Zav, Zava, and there is Nida and Yoledis. Okay, we don't have to go into all these details, but you should just know in the background that as far as Tumas Medrash is concerned, these four categories generate Tumas Medrash. Now, it's a little bit confusing because there's another Tumah called Tumas Maga, which is direct contact between the Tumah and the victim. And why do we need Tumas Medrash over here? Because if he's putting his foot into the sandal, and he's a Zav, or a Zava Yoledis, or a Nida, then by definition it's Tumas Maga. So for that we should just point out that the difference between Tumas Maga and Tumas Medrash is that in Tumas Maga, you need direct contact. In Tumas Medrash, what you need is the weight of Lihishayin Olav. So let's say, for example, you know, you can sleep on a bed, and there are many mattresses or sheets that separate your body from the bottom mattress. So the top mattress maybe is Tomei B'Tumas Maga, but the other mattresses below that, they would contract Tumas Medrash, because he's considered sleeping on all these different mattresses. Now, again, if we were learning Tumah V'Taro, you should know that when it comes to a tumah that is contracted, as opposed to the original tumah, so that is called a rishon tumah, and that cannot be metame odom v'kelim. But in the case of medrash, the Torah was machadish that the medrash itself, that means the bed he slept on or the couch he sat on, is an ava tumah. That's an upgraded status of tumah that could be metame odom v'kelim. Okay, you know, we don't have to necessarily know all of this. All right, now what happens? In the Mishnah, what happens is that sandal shenifsika achas mi oznav. What happens? The way they manufacture the sandal is it has two rings on the right and the left, each sandal. I'm talking about one sandal, right? And what they do is they take the straps and they push it through these rings, and those straps will crisscross and tie down the sandal to his leg. And if those rings break, then he can no longer put the straps through the rings in order to make sure that his sandal is attached to his leg. So nifsaka achas mi oznav. So it's called an ear because it's shaped round like an ear, and he's got two of them. But in this case, only one of the two ears was broken. And theoretically, what he could do is, he could use the other ring and put the strap through that ring and somehow tie it around his shoe, his foot, so in such a way that it won't fall off. Again, that's not the perfect way of doing it, but the sandal is still functional. And therefore, it's tumas medris, because again, a sandal is a classic case of tumas medris. The zav or the aletis, etc., is wearing a sandal. The weight is on the sandal. Is at this point, everything is fine. It's not so fine because it's tumit. But what I mean to say is that the original status of the sandal as a kli is still intact, because only one of the two ears has fallen off. Now, watch what would happen. If, let's say, the second ear would fall off, the second ring on the other side, then the sandal becomes totally functionless, and therefore the tumah is parchaliavir. In our case in the Mishnah, actually the second ear did fall off, but he fixed the first ear before the second ear fell off. Tikna, and he fixed up the ear, and therefore tamei medras. Okay, then, so the shem kli or the shem sandal has not been undermined or neutralized by the fact that one of the two ears broke, and now he went ahead and he fixed that ear. Nifska shnia. Now the story gets a little more exciting. Because now the second ozen was broken. And a sandal with two broken oznayim is not a sandal at all. Vitikna. And he fixed it. Tor min ha-medris. Aval tomei Bimaga Medrus. Okay. Now, the Mishnah makes a distinction between two kinds of tumah with regard to the sandal. One is called Medrus, or Midros. And the other is called Maga Midras. Now let's keep in mind that Midras is an Avatuma. Midras Hazav is an Avatuma, it's Metameyon and Vekele. Maga Midras is a Rishon Latuma. That's not in the same high caliber as Midras. Now, the Mishnah is telling me that once the second Ozen falls off, then as far as Tumas Midras is concerned, this sandal is no longer a sandal. Why? Because it had broken its first Ozen, and now the second Ozen broke off. Okay, but that's only if you need a shame sandal for Tumas Midras. But if you're talking about Tumas Maga to make it into a Rishon Latuma, then what difference does it make? I don't need a shame sandal for that. Anything that came in contact with a Zav or any Tuma would become a Rishon Latuma. The special, unique, upgraded Tuma of Midras, which generates a status of an avatuma, that no longer applies because the shame sandal is gone. So I'm just going to read to you the beer here in Hebrew. He says the following: Nifsaka ozen ashniya shel sandal v'tikna tar min ha-medris nitar ha-sandal mi'atumas medris shahoysabo kemon shenifsaka nifsaku shtei oznov is batul min ha-shem sandal, v'shuveni roi l'midras. Avol tamei b'maga medras, k'dover sh'noga b'medras, shu rishon l'tumah, mishum she'b'shosh nifsaka ozno, Shahoya Adayin Tomei Tumas Medris, Nagu Chelke Asandol Zebeze, Mishum Kach, U Tomei Gam Mago Medris. Riafkshe Nifsika, Ozno Botum Menushem Minol, Mishum Kach, Eno Tomei Vitumas Medris, Mikobakom Adayin Klihu, Shuroi Lishtamish Bobul Dvar Machirim, and therefore Lo Botlo Mimenu Tumas Mago Medris. Okay, fine. Now, Rabbi Yochanan is responding to Chizkiah in a case where he had smaller holes in a kli that were only large enough for a zayis to go through, and then he plugged them up one by one until finally, if you would have combined and integrated all these in the kavim, you would have the shear of kerimon. And let's compare it, says Rabbi Yochanan, to this Mishnah with regard to a sandal of a zah. Fi amat Allah, so Rabbi Yochanan now is talking to Chizkiah after having quoted the Mishnah, and he says we had a question on this Mishnah to try to clarify. Maishna Rishona, what is the reason that after the first ozen falls off, it was broken, it's still tame, the sandal is still tame tumas medrash. There's no choice but to say da'kai mishnia, because it has a second ozen. And since it has a second ozen, that's enough to continue and maintain the same sandal and the tumas medrash. Therefore, in a case where nifsikos and ashnia, meaning when we get to the point where the second ozen is broken off, nami, we should still say that this sandal maintains its shame sandal because it still it has the other ozen which he fixed up. Dakaima Rishona. So that was our question. Why does the Mishnah say that as far as Tumas Medrash is concerned, to make it into an Avat Tumah, when the second ring breaks, it loses its status as a Nal, as a Sandal, and therefore it's not Tumas Medrash. Why is that so? Why not say that it's exactly the same as the first case where only one of the two Aznayim was broken, and here also, When one of the two is not broken, you say it's still a Nal because it has another Ozen. Here also, when the second one breaks, we can say it's still a Nal because by virtue of the first Ozen. The Amrit La Allah, and how do we interpret this Mishnah that says that if Nifsika Ozen Ashniya, it's Torah Tumas Medrash? Panim Chadosh is Bolakan. In other words, we no longer have the original sandal. Ponim Chadosh means a new face. There's a new entity here. It's not the same sandal that the Zav was wearing, because he now has two different Oznayim. If he, you know, if he has one Ozen for the original, that would maintain the original status of the sandal. But now he has zero left from the original sandal, because none of the two Aznaim are the originals. Says Rabbi Yochanan to Chizkiah Hachinami, now we're ready for an analogy. You have a kli that had an opening of Kimotzi Zayas. And over again, as each successive Nekev came to being, you plugged them up. Is then the kli should certainly be tar. Why? Because Panim Chadosh is Bo'olakan. We really have a whole new entity, because if you look at the old original kli that received Tumah, then that kli, in terms of its original material as it was created, is missing a rimon's worth of the original. And now, although we have all these small holes that are plugged up, those are new plug-ups. And if we can compare the kli today to what it was before, originally, it's a brand new kli. And all this hopefully will impact on our issue about a karpav. you know, we've got so orangutan, we're so involved here in Hilchas Tuva V'Tara, we can lose the forest from the trees. You know, what we're trying to get back on board is the case of a Karpaf, where it was Hukaf Shalola Dira. He removes one Amma at a time, replacing each Amma. So now look at the Mechitzel, so the Hekev of the Karpaf. How much of these machitzas are blue from the original blue boards that I used? How many are white? I've got 11 white boards. That's already part of Chadoshos. That's a brand new entity. If I compare today to what was in the original manufacture of the machitzas of the Karpav, then I've got a pirtza of more than 10 amos, and I've got a new machitza of more than 10 amos to replace the other one, the old one. And that's called Panim Chadoshos Bolakan. Now, what was the response of Chizkiyo when he heard this beautiful presentation of Rabbi Yochanan? He says, Kari Alei, Les Dein Bar Inish. He describes Rabbi Yochanan, and he says he's not a human being. He's a malach. He's an angel. He belongs to a different world. Ike Diamri, others say that Chizkiyah burst out with a different excitement, and he says, Kigon Dein Bar Nosh. He is a great person. And based on this discussion between Chizkiyah and Rabbi Yochanan, Rav Nachman came to the conclusion that in a case of a Karpaf, Shalo Hukaf Ledira, and there was a Pirtza of one Amma at a time successively, and after each Pirtza of one Amma, he set up a replacement Gader, until finally he completed the replacement of Eser Amos plus of the original Pirtza, is therefore, it's considered a brand new Hekev, it's a new Mechitza, compared to the old Hekev. The old Hekev is gone, it's history, and now we can carry in this Karpa. Okay, now the Gemara wants to deal with the issue of a Rechava. Rechava, we said way back when, is a backyard, and you can have many houses that spill into a common chotzer, and each one of those houses has its own backyard. So there's the front of each house will spill into a common courtyard, and then you have the Rechava, which each house owner has his own personal private Rechava, and he doesn't share it with any of his other neighbors. Amar Rav Kahana, Rechava Shemeachorei Abatim, right, the front of the house is the house entering, spilling into the chotzer, the common chotzer for all the batim. And Achorei Abatim is the other side of the house, which also has an opening, an entranceway, but that spills into a Rechava, into a backyard. Now, what's the size of his backyard? Let's assume, for argument's sake, that the backyard is very, very large, and it's more than a Beis Asayim, which means that it could conceivably be defined as a Karpaf, which would generate an Issa Tiltal. And we're going to consider the Karpaf like a Karmelis, Midrabbanan, even if it's surrounded by Mechitzas. Now you might ask me, does this have any contemporary parallel? And I'll tell you the truth, I recently attended a wedding over Zoom the wedding took place, and I only found this out towards the end of the wedding, when the Bala Simcha got up publicly and thanked so-and-so for hosting the wedding in his backyard. And during the whole course of the wedding, I'm talking to my wife and I'm saying, where is this gigantic place that's open with trees? And it was absolutely stunning. And it's 10 minutes over the George Washington Bridge into Jersey. You're mamish at the northern end of Manhattan. Maybe I'm exaggerating. Maybe it's 15 minutes over, you know, if you take what's called Route 4. You know, I always forget whether it's west or east. I can't remember. Anyway, going towards the city. Take you 15 minutes, literally, if there's no traffic. I mean, that doesn't... If you go at midnight, maybe. But, so you can have a backyard, which is called a rechava, and it has the dimensions of a karpaf. It's more than a base of sayin. Says Rav Kahana, Ein metaltelin bo ela b'arba amos. This rechava has the same status as a karpaf, which is more than base of sayin. Shalo hukaf l'dira. And you're not allowed to carry in a karpaf, just like you can't carry in a carmos, which means the maximum amount distance you can carry is 4 amos. Now, you know, the obvious question is, why isn't this called hukaf l'dira? Amar Rav Nachman, in Pasach lo Pesach, mutal etaltel bekulo. Sha Pesach matiro. Says Rav Nachman, what Rav Kahana had in mind is a house that has only one entranceway, one door. And that's the door at the front of the house that leads out into the courtyard. But his house is completely closed in the back. There is no opening to the rechava. And therefore, the rechava has the status of lo hukaf l'dira. However, says Rav Nachman, if he opens up an entranceway to his rechava from the back of his house, now he has another exit from his house, then mutal etaltel bekulo. Why? Because the Pesach that he adds now changes and impacts on the state of the and the status of the karpaf. It makes it into a karpaf shehukaf lidira, and now it's mutar betiltul. Now I would pay for it. You know, I'm going to pay him to bring a carpenter and open up that second Pesach. Imagine, now he has use on Shabbos to his entire karpaf. But now we got a little bit of a problem, because the implication of Rav Nachman is that you could take a karpaf that was asur betiltul and now remove its status by simply making it into a base dira, hukaf l'dira. But what about the original hekev? Remember we said that unless you remove the original hekev, then the status of the karpaf continues, even though now presently it is hukaf l'dira. Says the Gemara, this is Rav Nachman clarifying his point, v'lo amaron elo kishe posach ule besof hukaf. I'm only going to allow that opening in the back of his house leading to the rechava to be matir tiltul in the rechava if the opening was there before he set up the mechitzos around his rechava. Aval hukaf, if initially he had set up his hekev and the mechitzos that surround this rechava, and at that moment in time he had no Pesach, so then it takes on the status of a karpaf, as we saw in Rav Kahana. It's also betiltul up to 4 amos, beyond 4 amos, is then low. Then the Pesach alone is not enough to be matir tiltul in this karpaf, in this rechava, because the rechava had initially the state of a karpaf, and it always remains the state of a karpath, even if now it becomes hukaf l'dira. Because as we said before, hukaf l'dira doesn't describe the reality as is in the present, but it describes the maisa hekif. And here the maisa hekif mechitzos was hukaf shelo l'dira, and it generated the status of a karpath. So Gemara is not happy with this. Pasach l'sof hukaf. If Rav Nachman wants to teach us that the Rechava is mutter b'tiltul because he had the Pesach first and then he set up the Hekev, is Pshita. I mean, that's called a Hekev Mechitzos from the opening of his bias on the back into the Rechava, and that's a Hekev L'Shem Dira. In such a case, do I need Rav Nachman to teach me this din? Rav Nachman says that that Pesach lo Pesach mutul etaltul bekulo, and why? Because the Pesach was there before the Hekev Mechitzos. I mean, I don't need Rav Nachman for that. I mean, you or I could have said that. Lo tzricha, why did Rav Nachman need to teach me the het etaltul in this Rechava? Is because it's a case of the ispe bei dore, that before he was makif the Rechava, he had a bei dore there. Bei dore in Hebrew is called a goren. I think in English it would be called a threshing ground. And I have the English translation. We can look it up. And what's it called?
A granary.
Granary, okay. But again, what is a granary? Because to tell you the truth, I don't have a dictionary.
We're city boys.
That's it. But I would tell you what a granary is if I was Merriam-Webster. A granary is a place where you do threshing. It's a threshing floor. Okay, fancy English is a granary. Now, a granary, since it's like you say very well, Don, it's farming, that's not called hukaf l'dira. You know, that's like planting vegetables and stuff like that. Ismael de Tema, I might have thought, if not for Rav Nachman, adaiti de bei dori avde, this bei dori, this granary, is what he wants to now have access to. Until now, he would go around his house, you know, make a whole circular motion in order to get to his granary. Now he decides that he wants to save himself that extra, you know, couple of schleps, and he opens up an entranceway into his granary. So he goes straight from his, you know, from his house into the granary. And therefore, that's not called a hekev lidira. Kamash Malan, that's Rav Nachman's Chiddush, that we're not going to say this. We're going to assume that that Pesach that he's making is called Hekef L'dira. Now, the truth is that we intuitively appreciate the Hava Mina before Rav Nachman better than the Maskona, because it doesn't say anywhere in Rav Nachman that he opened the Pesach and he removed the granary. The impression you get is that the granary is still up and running. And if you ask me why he opened the Pesach, my answer is the same today as it was yesterday. He opened the Pesach in order to have access, clear, immediate access to his granary. So why is that called Hekef Dira? And I'm just going to take a look at the English translation, see if he perhaps adds something here. Let me just see if I can find it. He says, just one second. He says, Rav Nachman informs us that the intention is to use the back for dwelling purposes. Okay, he adds something. I was hoping for more, but I'll take what I can get, as you say. And Rav Nachman says that this Pesach has now a double function. There are many, many different things that he can do and many, you know, tashmishim functions that he can enjoy in this Rechava. And we're not going to assume that when he set up a Pesach, it's exclusively for the sake of the granary. But there are many, many different functions and benefits that he could have from this Rechava. And the Hekef, therefore, is considered a Hekef Ludir. Okay. Now, let's just introduce, if we can, the next sugya, which, what do we decide? We'll pick this up on Sunday. Is that, Steve, is that, I think that was the final decision. I don't remember. You'll
Rabbi, before we go forward, I don't think I understand what Rav Nachman has added here. I lost that.
Again, you would have said that a granary is not called Dira, and therefore, when he opens up the Pesach and he's got a granary, you know, as soon as he walks out of this, you know, backside opening, his entranceway, he ends up in the granary, then that Pesach is not related to Dira, it's related to granary. It's like farming, it's not personal usage.
Okay.
You know, he's not going to go out there and, you know, read his newspaper in the shade or something like that. So it's not Hukaf Ledira. Kamash Malar of Nachman tells me a big chiddush. That even though he's got a granary there, we're not going to assume that he opens up his entrance exclusively for the purpose of having access to his granary, but he's got this gigantic, you know, rechava, this beautiful backyard. He may want to host somebody's wedding, you know, during the corona period, you know, and in his backyard. So he has other functions, and he wants to be able to take food out, you know, from his house, not only to his chater in the front of his house, but even to his backyard in the back of his house. And therefore it's called Hukaf Ledir. That's the Chiddush of Rav Nachman. All right. Let me just spend a few minutes trying to introduce the next sugi. We've established that a Karpaf Shehukaf Ledira, if he plants vegetables, then that nullifies the status of Hukaf Ledira, because people don't live in a place that's full of vegetable patches. You know, I give the example of like cabbages or those large, you know, green leafy vegetables. You know, what are you going to do over there? You know, it's a great place to grow vegetables, but it's not a great place to play Mahjong. You know what I'm saying? It doesn't have any function, and therefore it's low Hukaf Ledira. However, if he plants trees, we said that that's not mevatel dir, that doesn't undermine his residency, because on the contrary, people have a tendency of sitting under the apple boughs and enjoying the shade of the trees. What happens, that's the introduction to the next sugya, if he fills up the karpaf with mayim? And I'm not sure if he did this deliberately, because it would help him in planting as a farmer, or something went awry. Karpaf Yosef Mibesu Asayim Shukaf Ledirov and Ismale Mayim, all of a sudden it got full with water. Okay, of course I picked up the wrong sefer. Just give me... You know, I'm shifting from Hebrew to English here. He says, that it was the karpaf was enclosed, as we said, ledira, and now it became full of water. All right. So we'll have to see as we go along exactly what happened here. Anyway, Sovar Abana Lememar Kizroim Dam. The Rabbanan thought in the Havamina to equate this with planting vegetables. And it no longer is suitable for residential use. It originally was, but then he planted vegetables. It originally was, and now it's inundated with water. So it's no longer fit for residential use. Again, you and I would say, but he may be able to drain out the water. Usher. The Rabbanan thought that they should prohibit it because it has the same status as planting vegetables. Amaluhu Rabbi Abba Achvua Derav Bere Derav Mesharshia Hachi Amrina Bishmei Derava Mayim Kinitoyim Damu Vishar. That water has the same status as planting trees, and it does not undermine the status of the Karpaf as Hukaf Lidira. And Amemar qualifies this, and that you'll see on Daf Chavdalet Amid Beis. Omar Amemar Vahu Dechazion Litashmishe, that even though it's flooded with water, it's still fit for use. Means he could drink the water. Avalo Chazion Litashmishe Lo, if it doesn't have any function, it's absolutely inundated, he can't use it to drink, it has no residential purpose, then we would have to nullify this Karpaf as Hukaf Ladira, and it would be exactly similar to the case where he planted vegetables.